Have you ever, looked at an old dusty book on a shelf and thought, could this actually be worth something? And I don't just mean sentimental value. Think ancient texts, maybe even some first editions you wouldn't expect, going for millions at auction. Today, we're doing a deep dive into exactly that, the world of rare and old books, not just as history, but, well, as serious investments. We're going to explore what makes a book really valuable, look at some of the most expensive ones ever sold. You might be surprised.
It is fascinating, isn't it? How books, even now in our digital world, are still these direct physical links to the past. They carry so much more than just the words. So, yeah, this deep dive, we're pulling from a couple of key sources. There's a great article listing the top 15 most expensive rare and old books up to 2025, and also a really solid guide on investing in old books. Our goal here is basically to unpack all that, help you get a handle on this unique market. Maybe you can spot something interesting yourself.
Okay, so it sounds like it's not just the books changing, but the whole scene. Who's buying, how they're buying, what are the big shifts happening right now?
Yeah, that's a really good place to start, actually. Yes, we're definitely seeing a significant evolution. It used to be that a lot of big deals happened privately, sort of voce quiet sales between dealers and clients. But now, the really high profile stuff, it's mostly happening at auction, very public, lots of attention. And who's buying is changing too. It's not just, say, the traditional collectors, maybe business types in their 50s.
Right.
We're seeing tech money, VCs, people who grew up totally digital, but now they seem to be looking for these tangible connections to history.
Yeah.
It's interesting, even the New York Times style section has covered it. It signals a kind of, well, boom in the industry.
That is a huge shift. So, with these new players, are the types of books fetching top dollar changing as well? I mean, religious texts are always valuable, right?
Yeah.
But are other kinds joining that top tier?
Absolutely, you've nailed it. Religious texts, yeah, they're still a cornerstone, immense historical and cultural weight there. But the list of the most expensive books, it's definitely broadening. It reflects maybe more contemporary tastes alongside the traditional ones. You see some surprising first editions popping up.
Okay, this is where I find it gets really fascinating. Let's talk about the absolute giants, the books most of us could only dream of owning. But understanding why they're so valuable, what drives those prices, that tells you a lot about the market peaks, right?
Exactly. It begs the question, what makes a book worth millions? It's rarely just one thing. It's usually this powerful mix of age, how complete it is, its historical importance, and maybe a really unique ownership history, the provenance. We can look at a few key examples that really show this.
Lead the way. Some of these numbers are just staggering.
Okay, let's start with the Codex Sassoon. Think about this. It has all 24 books of the Hebrew Bible, dated to the late 9th century, and it's incredibly complete. 792 pages, only about 8 missing. Written in this beautiful Tiberian Hebrew, it sold for, get this, $38.1 million in May 2023.
Wow, 38 million.
Yeah. Bought by Alfred H. Moses, now it's in the National Library of Israel. Its value, its age, yes, but also its completeness as one of the oldest Hebrew Bibles, just a direct link back.
Truly incredible, a piece of history like that. What about something maybe equally significant but from a different tradition?
Good question. Let's look at the printer's manuscript of the Book of Mormon. This isn't just any copy. It's one of the earliest, actually handwritten by Oliver Cowdery, who was an early follower. It's believed to be the manuscript Joseph Smith used for the first printing. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints bought it for $35 million back in 2017 using donations.
35 million. So again, that direct connection to the origin of a faith.
Precisely. It's irreplaceable as a primary source document for them. That drives the value enormously.
And then you have things like Leonardo da Vinci's notebooks,
Yeah.
the Codex Lester. That must be something else.
Oh, it absolutely is. It's Da Vinci's actual handwritten journal. Pages filled with his thoughts, sketches, scientific observations from around 1504 to 1508. It was owned by the Earl of Leicester's family for ages, then sold in 1980 for about $5 million. Then Bill Gates bought it in 1994 for $30.4 million.
And Gates owns it.
He does, and he often loans it out to museums, which is great. People get to see Da Vinci's thinking on water, the moon, fossils. Raw genius on the page. So its value is this mix of the author's sheer importance, the scientific content, and just, well, it's Da Vinci's hand.
Unbelievable. These examples really highlight authorship and history, but what about sheer artistry? Beautifully made books.
Great point. For that, look at the Sherburne Missal. This is a liturgical hymnal, a book of hymns and prayers for church from Sherburne Abbey in England, medieval. It's considered one of the absolute best surviving examples of English Gothic illumination, just stunning artwork. The Duke of Northumberland sold it to the British Library for $21 million in 2001. Apparently, part of the reason was to help cover inheritance taxes.
21 million. So beauty, preservation, and rarity all rolled into one. Even taxes play a part in these stories. What about the Book of Tang you mentioned?
Right, the Book of Tang. This is a 10-volume history of the Chinese Tang Dynasty.
Yeah.
But the interesting part is why this version exists. Emperor Renzong of Song ordered it rewritten because he felt the original version focused too much on bureaucratic stuff and left out the spiritual or mythological accounts. He wanted a different narrative. It was hidden for centuries, popped up briefly in the 80s, and then sold at auction in China in 2018 for $17.06 million.
$17 million. So its value is tied up in the history it tells and the story of its own creation and survival.
Exactly. The narrative around the object itself matters.
Okay, so we've seen ancient Bibles, Da Vinci's thoughts, medieval art, Chinese history. The range is incredible. We also mentioned modern first editions. The Harry Potter one really stands out.
It really does. A first edition hardback of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, and specifically one of the early ones with Joanne Rowling on the copyright page. The auction estimate was something like $27,000 to maybe $41,000.
It seems reasonable for a modern book, even Harry Potter.
You'd think. But it sold for $110,000.
Wow, 110K.
Yep. Just shows how cultural impact combined with real scarcity from that small initial print run can create massive value, even relatively recently.
That's a fantastic example, and it perfectly leads us to the next big question, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Beyond these crazy high figures, what actually makes any book rare? And maybe more importantly for listeners, what makes it a potentially good investment?
Right. This is where we pivot from, you know, looking at the peaks to understanding the nuts and bolts for someone perhaps wanting to collect. And like you said earlier, it's not just if it's old, it's valuable.
No, definitely not. There's more to it.
Much more. Rarity isn't simply scarcity. You can have a book where only 5 copies exist, but if nobody wants it, well, it's scarce, but not valuable. Real value comes when people desire it, find it fascinating, important, collectible. Our sources point to a few key things. Availability, condition is huge, special features, associations like who owned it, and provenance.
Okay, let's dig into those a bit. Condition sounds obvious, but how much does it really matter?
It's paramount. But what good condition means can depend on the book's age. For, say, 20th century books, the dust jacket is surprisingly critical. Take F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby, a first edition, great shape, with that original dust jacket. Reports say around $400,000.
$400,000.
Yeah. But that same first edition, maybe in similar shape but missing the dust jacket, could be as low as $8,000.
That's an enormous difference just for the paper cover.
It is. It's about completeness and originality for collectors. Now, flip side, for really old books, say 17th century, some flaws are expected. Even desirable. Things like foxing, those little brown spots on the pages. That actually helps confirm its age and authenticity. Trying to fix it could hurt the value.
Okay, that's fascinating. So condition is key, but context matters. What else? You mentioned primacy.
Right, primacy. This is about being the first. But we need to be clear. There's a first edition and a first printing. Pretty much every book has a first edition. That's the first time it was published in that form. But the first printing is the very first batch they ran off the press. Often, especially if the publisher wasn't sure it would sell, that first print run is small. If the book then becomes a huge hit,
those first print copies become gold dust.
Exactly. That Harry Potter example, again, only about 500 hardcovers in the first print, 300 went to libraries. That scarcity drives the $110,000 price tag. It also applies to content books with the first mention of a major discovery or event or idea. That firstness adds historical value.
Okay, so first printings, first mentions. What about if a famous person owned the book? Does that association add value?
It definitely can. That's provenance, the history of ownership. If a book was owned by, say, a president, a famous scientist, a major writer, or was part of a renowned historical library collection, yes, that can significantly boost its value. But, and this is a big but, you need proof.
Right, you can't just say, oh, Lincoln probably read this.
Precisely. You need documentation, inscriptions, book plates, a clear chain of ownership. Solid proof makes valuation easier and reassures future buyers. Without it, it's just a story.
Makes total sense. Okay, thinking beyond single books, what about collecting strategies? Is it better to build a themed collection?
Often, yes. A focused collection can be worth more than the sum of its parts. Think about collecting all of the Bronte sisters' first editions, or maybe a specific area like 19th century botanical books, herbals. That coherence adds value. And research is crucial here too. Sometimes, surprisingly, a later edition might be more valuable than the first.
How does that happen?
Well, maybe the later edition included important illustrations for the first time or significant revisions by the author. William Camden's Britannia, a historical survey of Great Britain, is a good example. The first edition is valuable, sure, but later editions with added engraved maps, they can be worth 10 times more because the maps are highly sought after.
That really shows you need to know the specifics of each book and its history.
Yeah.
Any other big movers or interesting examples of appreciation we should touch on?
Yeah, a few interesting ones. Darwin's Origin of Species has apparently increased tenfold in value in recent years. Huge scientific importance, obviously. We mentioned Gatsby already. Its first edition value is up something like 1,372% over the last 20 years. Incredible. But maybe the most dramatic rise, our sources noted, was George Orwell's Animal Farm. A first edition went from about 190 pounds to 5,100 pounds in 20 years. That's over 2,500%.
Wow. Why such a big jump for Animal Farm?
Well, its political themes just keep resonating, don't they? It stays relevant. It shows that the content and its enduring cultural significance can really drive long-term value. And on a more accessible level, those colorful penguin paperbacks from the 1930s started as pennies. A well-kept one now could fetch up to 100 pounds. Great return if you find them.
That's a great tip for starting out. So okay, let's pull this together. For someone listening, maybe feeling inspired, wanting to start a collection, or even just figure out if that old book in the attic is worth something, What are the key takeaways? Top tips.
Okay, first, research, research, research. Use resources like specialist dealers, reputable sites like A-Books, or the Antiquarian Booksellers Association. Know what you're looking for. Second, don't automatically assume online is cheaper or better. You often can't judge the true condition accurately from photos, those nuances we talked about. Dust jackets, foxing, you need to see it. For anything significant, try to handle the book yourself. Visit reputable dealers. They have expertise, a reputation to maintain, and can offer really valuable advice.
Right. Seeing it in person seems crucial. And once you have these potentially valuable books, how do you look after them? You can't just chuck them on any old shelf, presumably.
Absolutely not. Preservation is key to protecting your investment. You need a stable environment, dry, dust-free, ideally away from direct sunlight, stable temperature. Slipcases are great for protection. For very fragile books, rebinding might be an option, but, and this is crucial always, always consult an expert first. Sometimes restoration can actually hurt the value if not done appropriately. Original condition is often preferred, even with flaws. And a general rule, always buy the best condition you can realistically afford. Serious collectors prioritize condition, so you should too.
It really sounds like having expert advice is vital, both for buying and for care.
It really is. If you're unsure, get an expert opinion. There are specialist appraisers, like those at places like New Bond Street Pawnbrokers, for example. They know how to assess rarity, condition, provenance, all of it. They can give you accurate valuations, even potentially offer loans against significant collections if that's something you need. Leveraging expertise is smart.
Well, this has been an absolutely fascinating journey. We've gone from, you know, million-dollar Bibles and Da Vinci's notes right down to Harry Potter and Penguin paperbacks. It's clear books are so much more than just words on paper.
Indeed. What this deep dive really shows is that books act as these incredible cultural anchors, pieces of history you can hold. And yes, for those who know what to look for, they can be significant investments. But the answer to, are rare books a good investment? It's always going to be nuanced, isn't it? It depends on the book, the condition, the market, your goals, that whole complex tapestry we discussed.
Yeah, what really sticks with me is how dynamic it all is. The market changes, why things are valuable changes. But that core connection people have to these physical objects, these pieces of history, that seems constant.
Exactly. It's about the stories they hold, both inside the covers and the stories of the books themselves. And maybe that leaves us with a final thought for you, the listener, to consider. If every old book tells a story through its journey, what forgotten treasures might be sitting on your own shelves? What stories are waiting there for a second look, or perhaps for their next chapter?
That's a wonderful thought to end on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the really quite captivating world of rare and old books.